Hello and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and this is episode number 86, How to Create an Effective Training Program. This show is coming out just after Thanksgiving, and I hope you all had a wonderful celebration of gratitude, family and fellowship, and dining. I also hope you survived any Black Friday shopping experiences you may have undertaken. And of course, Cyber Monday is coming up. And since this is the Lifetime Athlete Podcast, this may actually represent cyber infotainment. Actually, I think this is more just education than it is infotainment. But nonetheless, today's show is definitely cornerstone content for the Lifetime Athlete. I think Corner Cone would be a great name for an ice cream shop, but nonetheless, this show is all about the nuts and bolts of getting results. How to set up your training program to really kick ass, have fun, not get injured, and max out your potential. And those are challenging things to say the least. I'm going to lay out the basic framework that I use for creating awesome programs. And this is info that you can apply right away to anything that you're doing. There are five main areas that we will highlight, and this is in program design, and they are planning, execution, recording, adjusting, and evaluation. As we go along, we'll also provide some brief real-world examples of all this great stuff. I coach people in a variety of sports and fitness areas, and these concepts can be plugged into your programming no matter what peak performance goal you're pursuing. Whether you're a coach, a self-coached athlete, or you're an athlete who works with a coach in any capacity, this information can help you to develop an understanding of the basic principles that can really make a difference. In fact, if you've ever been frustrated by a lack of results in your training, or you've just been curious how to create an organized system that may be more effective, this show will give you the basic constructs of program design that work for anyone with a health, body composition, fitness, or athletic performance goal. This is the construct of where I start a coaching relationship with almost every client, and this evidence-based information can help you to get to your next level, whatever your goal may be. So the first thing is planning, or in other words, with your training program, design your plan. And that's all based around the goal. So we always say, well, what is the goal? What is meaningful to you? What's realistic, challenging, possibly attainable? Those are good characteristics that we use in goal setting methodology. And ultimately, we come up with this picture of, oh, this is what I would like to accomplish. From there, you say, well, where am I at right now? Or I might say, where are you at right now? And so this is an assessment of, okay, I want to achieve this goal, and this is my current status or ability level. And in many cases, a pretest may be appropriate. You know, if we have a trained individual, and it's safe to do some form of test. Not all tests are challenging, they can still be meaningful without being challenging. But we may do a pretest to establish, okay, this is baseline. This is where we are at. Then we kind of look at that a little more closely and say, well, what are your needs? What are you lacking? What do you need to develop to achieve this goal? Are there any things that we really see as major areas to emphasize or red flags that we can enhance with the training? And then we start to look at where is this athlete with respect to the type of training that they need and can do, have available as far as facilities and equipment, safety. So how much specific training versus supplemental training comes into the picture? Now, specific training is in your sport or desired activity. So if you are a hockey player, you're on the ice. A basketball player is practicing on the court. A runner is running. That's sport-specific training. Versus supplemental training, those are the things where we're probably in the gym or in the weight room or working on mobility and stability, strength, power, etc. And of course, there's even the other thing known as cross training, which really is alternative mode training. So we may have a runner doing some cycling or a swimmer using a rowing machine, and there's some amount of carryover or transfer with those activities, although sometimes it's not extensive beyond general conditioning. Nonetheless, we've established all these things. We know about you and as an athlete and who you are and what you're trying to accomplish. So now we can sort of roughly lay out the seasons or the cycles or blocks. And so those words get used a lot, but, you know, seasons are, they can correspond with time of the year, seasons of the year. They do not have to, but that would be an off-season, a pre-season, an in-season or peak season, and a post-season. And I've talked about that on the show before. We've also talked about cycles being macrocycles, mesocycles, and microcycles. And again, they can take different formats of a macrocycle being perhaps even as much as a year, 6 to 12 months, and microcycles being periods of several months, or excuse me, macro, let me start again, mesocycle. So macrocycle was 6 to 12 months in general, a mesocycle a couple of months, and then a microcycle might be a couple of weeks, even down to 1 week. We can also use the term blocks, which can be specific microcycles within the training. And those terms, again, get used interchangeably sometimes, but as long as we have an idea of how the training is going to be shaped and progressed, that's really all we need to know. Or you leave that up to the coach who should be doing a good job with that. So what we do is we create a loose template of weekly targets that we want to either hit in a workout or a performance marker. And then what are the sessions and how are they arranged to potentially fit the athlete? And I always like to say that we're doing this loosely and roughly because we're not a slave to that as a schedule. It's more of a network of principles and suggestions that we like to utilize. Then finally, when we're designing the plan, we set up the timeline. So, I mean, this could be anything, and it depends on, again, the goal, the athlete, the training experience, the level of motivation. For a lot of people, what I find is that 3 months can be a very reasonable time frame. And the reason I say this, in a lot of recreational athletes, fitness enthusiasts, a person can focus for 2 to 3 months fairly easily. It's the really driven individual who stays at it for 4 to 6 months or a year. Not that some of those people aren't our audience and my clients, but nonetheless, I'm just saying a lot of times we look at a 3 month progression, and that's usually very successful. Almost guaranteeing, because we know we can keep a person consistent within that time frame. So what we do is, once we've got that timeline, we work backwards from the goal date. So we know out at the goal date, whether that's a specific date or a rough range, what we want to be having as performance, and then we know where we're at. And so how do we progress or then further lay shape to that rough template or schedule that we've been developing? So one of the athletes that I've worked with recently was a high school athlete who was a volleyball player, and we looked at working in her off season, just for about 3 months, on improving overall athletic conditioning and specifically vertical jump performance. So her goal was to increase her vertical jump from 16 inches to 20 inches, and that's outstanding. You know, that's actually 19 to 20 inches is a norm or an average for college women volleyball players. And so, you know, a high school athlete that's doing that is really doing well. We determined that, you know, as a younger developing athlete, she still has some needs for basic strength. So, you know, we want to get that up to a good baseline level. We also found that we could improve technique, the art of jumping. And there are some definite ways to look at the types of jumps and how we approach them and how we compress or wind the body, and also just developing both specific explosive power within the jumping capacity and explosive power within the body itself. And so that's oftentimes a training progression or transition where we build strength, which oftentimes has a little bit of a slower muscle fiber recruitment or movement performance, almost a grind in some capacities, to explosive power, where now we need to convert more quickly and change potential energy to kinetic energy and move the body rapidly. So anyway, those are things that I put in. And with this basic framework, we said, well, okay, the data that I had collected led me to think, let's do 3 low-volume but high-intensity sessions per week, a few simple things we can do, and then 3 kind of mobility and recovery, or what we call GPP, general preparation workouts. And oftentimes with these programs, I'll say, okay, we've got 2 workouts. Each maybe to be done 3 times per week. But you know what? In many cases, if we get 2 of each, we're doing pretty doggone good. So that's one of the things that we went over. And this is still in the designing of the plan or the planning. And so we had this 3-month plan, and we thought, okay, let's do weekly check-in. So we're doing this through a cyber model and doing a weekly check-in on the video screen using a Zoom meeting. And it's really fun to respond to the questions, watch movements, give a few cueing and techniques, and that's how we did that. So number 2 in this 5-item way to design an effective program is to execute, and especially to execute flexibly. So what I mean by this, I often use this term that we should practice moderate consistency. And that means that you move things around as you need, because life is going to throw schedule changes and holiday meals like Thanksgiving dinner, you know, school activities. And it's good to be a bit flexible. Don't beat yourself up if you don't hit everything as we've put it down on paper. In fact, if you get close and we move and modify, that's how you create the win. Also with executing flexibly, place an equal or higher emphasis on recovery as compared to training. It's actually king. And, you know, fitness or performance as a result of training plus recovery. Actually, let's throw mindset in there too for performance. But nonetheless, we really need to absorb the training that we're doing. Just piling up training with little regard to how the body is absorbing it and progressing is not as valuable. Modify workouts in the moment. So while training to capture high energy or dodge injury or breakdown. And so that's kind of where we look at, okay, you're having a fantastic day. Maybe it's okay to pile on something here, you know, a bit more effort or volume or intensity or weight. Sure, let's do that. Let's just do it intelligently. And also, more commonly, it's to do the opposite. Oh, you know, something wasn't quite right. You know, my recovery, my sleep, my nutrition, other stressors, you know, maybe I'm a little sore from something, a tweak something. We want to dodge injury and breakdown. So if you can find a way to float the workout, to coast it, to cruise it, get some stimulus in, but get the right amount. And that gets into what we call, and I borrowed this from the pharmaceutical industry years ago, or pharmacology, which is the minimum effective dosage versus the maximum absorbable dosage. So many times when we're in a float mode or we're just dealing with maintenance of fitness and health, we want the minimum effective dosage. Just do the minimum amount to keep the gains that we've made present or functioning within the body. And then the maximum absorbable dosage is when we really want to carefully go after those last few percentage points. And how can we put as much into our body as stimulus, that is, that it can utilize? So there's an art form there, and I think that I always try to do a good job with that as a listener and an observer, as a coach, but I also try to instill that instinctive wisdom in every person that I'm working with. And many already have it, but we try to bring that out. And then lastly, within this execute flexibly or second portion of the program design, we want to establish a couple of KPIs or key performance indicators to visit occasionally. These are markers that tell us, you know, how are we doing? How are we progressing? So they're objective. What we did, what I did with this athlete, we did together was we said, okay, again, try to complete, you know, 4 to 6 of those sessions. 4 is fine. 6 is awesome, but doesn't have to be 6 all the time, around your school and family schedule. Let's really cue the sleep hygiene principles that we're always talking about, like a cold, dark room and an evening wind down ritual and reduction of screen exposure and blue lights, blue wavelength of the light spectrum in the evenings. Optimal nutrition, and that takes on a lot of characteristics for each person based on genetics and athletics and activity level, but nonetheless, no garbage, no inflammation provokers. Let's get a lot of GDA or general activity in addition to training. All that walking around and movement helps to maintain circulatory function and flushing and nourishing of the tissues, and we avoid metabolic stasis or stagnation. Breathing. Let's look at breathing, both as a way to increase exercise performance while performing exercise. It's one of those critical components, and we need to look at how breathing correlates with different movements of the body and stacking of the rib cage over the pelvis and how the thoracic diaphragm functions with the pelvic floor and what the visceral contents do. You know, those are all things that I work on with my clients, but also breathing as a way to enhance recovery and get into that parasympathetic or rest and digest sympathetic or nervous system state. And so that's a wonderful thing. And also the use of hot and cold, hot showers, hot baths, sauna, steam room, cold showers, cold immersion. Those things can be quite valuable for the athlete in terms of either as an adjunct to training, assisting recovery, or even ramping up before a workout. There are applications, again, we've talked about on this show, and also we'll be talking about again because they're a wonderful hormetic stimuli to the body that humans have been using for a very long time. Also, I wanted to work very closely with this athlete on the concept of soreness or fatigue. And again, whenever that's present to any great degree that you just don't warm up out of it, we modify the plan or even shut it down. Live to fight another day. A workout is just a workout, and you never should have to super, super psych yourself up to hit it. That may be artificial. And then lastly, with those objective measures, KPIs, we looked at a weekly vertical jump test. They had a Vertec, which is the vertical jump measuring device. It's kind of a pole with those tabs on it that you jump up and strike. And we used that to measure feedback, as well as utilizing every second week a 3RM or 3-repetition maximum leg press. And one of the reasons why we chose the leg press, we were doing some various squatting, lunging, stepping, jumping movements in the program, but this athlete, you know, hadn't reached the, you know, development level to really load a heavy squat. Just wasn't appropriate, but we used adjunctively the leg press in the training sessions. Okay, so we have designed and we have been executing. We've planned, you know, we've executed. Now we're going to record and track. So it's important to keep some records of what you're doing because this allows us to do some of these processes that we're talking about today. So keep a simple training log. Use software that's available. There's some great stuff out there. I use that with some of my athletes. One of my favorite things, though, is to just use a spreadsheet and share that, whether that's, you know, like an Excel spreadsheet that you share via attachment. Or I guess now you can do that via OneDrive. I also use Google Sheets quite a bit with folks. And there are some that will use a notebook, a spiral notebook, or a composition book, and write some key things in. And then we can either talk about those or they can shoot me a photograph of it. Easy to do. Store the key workout data. So whatever your sport is, you know what your workout data is. It's like what you do in your training, what were the sets and reps, or in the case of, let's say, a cyclist, you know, what's your mileage, what was watts, what was average and peak watts in a workout, heart rate data, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be too many things, but we want those markers in there. Then input your recovery measures, both subjective and objective. Some folks will use a variety of the newer technologies that are out there to be very detail-oriented with recovery measures. And others, I just ask them to record, you know, how they feel the day after a workout. You know, what is your energy, your appetite for training? How do your joints feel? How quickly did you seem to go from getting out of bed to kind of the fully operational state? Any of these things are valuable. And an example would be that, okay, here was the planned session. So you may have that on your spreadsheet. Here's what you actually did. And then here's how you felt during or after. Those are really all we need to know in many cases. So I set that up as a shared doc with this athlete. We looked primarily at, in the exercises, what were the sets, reps, weights, and rest periods, just roughly keeping track, seeing how close to the plan things were going. We monitored resting heart rate taken in the morning, and we looked at body weight. And it's let me start again. It's particularly important with, let's say, high school female athletes that we really want to have a healthy view on weight. And we didn't want this athlete losing weight, so that's really something we tried to focus on, and certainly use the nutrition to integrate with the training. And then subjectively in the morning, a rating of sleep quality. How well do you think you sleep? We put a numeric scale on that and your energy level. Now, you can use some great stuff out there these days. You know, there's a number of kind of isolated heart rate variability apps. There's the Oura Ring, the Whoop Strap, and these things, they can be extremely useful in giving tons of objective information, as long as you can use it as an educator and a motivator and not necessarily a depressor. And so the last thing I'd say, unlike how I described this third item, recording and tracking, keep it brief. Treat that doc as a reference tool. Keep it fun and positive, not as a big assignment or a punitive measure. Okay, we're almost there. We're looking at the fourth thing in creating an effective program, and that is to assess, or assess and adjust. So what we want to do now is use the data from the training log to see if we are progressing. So the increases in the key workouts or the markers of those KPIs should generally be going upward. We figure out, based on this experience, well, what sessions work the best for this athlete, for you? You know, what do you like the best? Which are most fatiguing? Which do you dread? And we kind of figure out, okay, well, if you're dreading something, we probably don't need that. But how do we make the training both enjoyable and results producing? There is a way. We sculpt the workouts. So that within using that data, we then, okay, let's modify this. Let's work a little less on, maximum velocity, and let's work more on endurance in some capacity, perhaps not with this jumping athlete. And also the spacing of training. So we want to have it fit the patterns that we're identifying. If a person is feeling great, we've actually done a fairly good job in design, and we don't have too much to change. But if they're chronically tired, what we're going to do is probably do less fitness maker workouts or, you know, higher workload impact types of things and have more recovery days. Put it in there. Space things out. Keep it absorbable. That's, again, all those principles relate to each other. And what we did ultimately with the high school volleyball player was we said, well, let's expect progress, but let's not expect it to be linear. And that's really something that's worth talking about. If you picture a graph and you say, well, gosh, if you just think about ability on the vertical axis and time on the horizontal axis, we almost would expect a 45-degree line just to be linear, going from low to high, low left, high right across the graph. But in reality, the human experience is nonlinear. And so what I like to do is say, let's use simple statistics. If we just start looking at all the data points and we back up from it, well, yeah, if you draw what's called in statistics a line of best fit, which kind of goes through the middle of those points, it approximates, yeah, things are upwardly trending, but we're going to have days, they're just going to happen, where you're a little low, and a few days where, gosh, you're exceptionally high. And we always try to learn from that. Well, what did I do or not do to evoke that? And so that's a wonderful way to use data to then adjust training and learn. So what we did also was we identified the areas to float. What I mean by that is, okay, she was doing really well in a few areas, so they really weren't as important for the overall outcome or goal. So that needs less work. Let's change up our ratios a little bit. And then what are the things that the capacities that are not responding that we need, they're maybe a little bit deficient, we focus more on those. And so we did that with tweaking some workouts. And, you know, I mentioned this before, but we always add recovery days when needed. So you never do, especially explosive training or high intensity training, when you're tired or sore, the training doesn't take, and it does exponentially increase your injury risk. So we went through four things so far, and that was designing the plan, executing flexibly, recording and tracking workout data, and also assessing and adjusting as we go along. The final thing that we always want to do in effective program design is evaluate and strategize. So what is that? Well, we say, okay, how would you frame your outcome? Are you happy with the results that you got, or why not? And then we say, well, what important things did you learn about yourself or about training? What might you consider doing differently if you had to do this over again or for the next go-around moving forward? And how can you use this experience to your benefit long-term? So first of all, one of our outcomes that we were pretty happy with, to be quite honest, we got a 3-inch increase in vertical jump from 16 inches to 19 inches. So again, in high school, that's outstanding. That's a collegiate average. This athlete realized that she had more fast twitch capacity or explosive power than she thought. It just took the training to kind of bring that out and, you know, sort of upregulate certain things in the body and, you know, and maybe de-emphasize others. One of the things we both agreed on was that a few less sessions done a bit more intensely, but not necessarily longer, with more spacing, might be the ideal model for this athlete, and oftentimes it is for many folks. You know, again, when a person's really motivated, I sometimes can't talk them out of training, but what I really like to do is say, let's do a lot of very easy things that are shoring up the body, and then when it's time to get after it, really, really do so. That really gets the results and has been proven. What most people fall into the trap of is they like the consistency of training, and they really say, oh, I just want to hit workouts, but suddenly it becomes a little bit gray where the hard sessions aren't quite as hard as they could be, and the easy sessions are a little too hard to really facilitate our recovery goals. So again, just lessons there. And then lastly, what we both thought was that she could use this format as a base for her training next year in the off season with refinement. And we'll probably work together in that capacity. Again, trying not to just do the same thing, but use this as a way to do it better. So lastly, in reviewing, we've got those five principles for effective training program design: planning. Figure out your plan, your goal, roughly what it looks like, and the timeline. Executing. Always do so flexible. Recording. Track a few important variables. Adjusting. Use this data to then make the workout fit your needs more effectively. And then finally, evaluate. Try to take a learning experience from what we did to ultimately have more success and do better. So that's a nice sort of theoretical model about training. And as you can see, this show was about all those principles and concepts and constructs. We'll be coming back with more shows in the future that use this framework as the foundation and then describe specific exercises, workouts, and supportive practices that really flesh out this model. So if this was the skeleton, we'll put the muscle and the organs into it. And really, this was what I would say is the how you design a program. And you are the who. Love the who. Won't get fooled again. Lifetime athlete. So you're the lifetime athlete. And the next thing that comes up is the what. So that's what we're going to put in there. So you can apply a lot of these principles to your individual needs. So thank you, as always, for joining us. And, you know, have a happy and safe Cyber Monday. Hopefully you find some things that can help your overall life and fitness in the shopping world. And by all means, please rate, review, subscribe, and share, and help all of your friends become lifetime athletes just like you. Till next time, this is Coach Jay-Z signing off. Have an awesome day.